Hey there, adventurer. I appreciate you taking the time to do an investigation check and dig into the archives of the show. I wanted to let you know that this is an old episode back when the show was called The Hard Thing Podcast. The topics are still the same, though the format and some of the names are different. If instead you are coming back to The Hard Thing Podcast, well, surprise, we changed our name and some of our branding. Feel free to hang out in the archives and listen to all the wonderful old episodes of The Hard Thing Podcast, or take on a new adventure by listening to some of our current episodes. Either way, happy adventuring.
Is there anywhere in your life that you particularly feel stuck? And is there anywhere in your life that you don't really go, that you avoid because of pain or trauma that you've had in your past? Well, that's exactly where you should go, and I'm going to tell you why on today's episode of The Hard Thing Podcast with my guest, Victoria Song. I'm Justin Lewis, I'm your host, and I'm here to help you learn how to do hard things that you're dealing with right now, but also learn how to do the hard things that are coming down the pipe. And my guest today is Victoria Song. She is a leadership advisor. She got her start in finance as a venture capitalist, but now she is an executive coach for many bright and brilliant leaders who just need that little extra push to get above and beyond where they want to be. She also just wrote the book, Bending Reality, How to Make the Impossible Probable. And today is an excellent conversation. We talk a lot about emotional issues and the garden of the mind and making it so you can achieve what you previously thought was impossible and figuring out why you thought it was impossible. We talk a lot about emotional issues and a little bit about trauma. It was just a great conversation. And again, I appreciate it on a personal level myself. But without further ado, I want to give you my conversation with Victoria Song. All right. Well, thank you for coming on the Hard Thing Podcast, Victoria. I'm excited to have you here and have this conversation with you.
My pleasure, Justin. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah. Well, like I told you, I want to ask the question that I ask every single guest, and hopefully I prepared you enough. But Victoria, what's the hardest thing you've ever done?
I think the hardest thing that is a lifetime journey is undoing a lot of the programming, conditioning, narratives that I'm sure we can all relate to, belief systems, paradigms from our family and parents, even transgenerational trauma that I've gotten to look at and face and heal and process, and still identifying all the ways it's rippled out into various parts of my life. But I would say one of the places I'm most proud of where I've broken through is my relationship to freedom in my life today. So freedom to create a life that's full of joy, happiness, fulfillment, wealth, abundance, health, community, connection, all of these things that I think growing up, I didn't really have a role model for, because my parents, probably like a lot of you all here, had parents that were very busy, distracted, making money, and very financially insecure and safe. And I think I grew up thinking that in order to be successful, in order to make money, in order to feel safe financially, I had to sacrifice my joy, sacrifice my health, sacrifice my family time, sacrifice my passions, what I want to do, and just struggle and lift that heavy weight of ambition and success. And so I think freedom from that narrative has probably been the hardest thing to achieve, but something I'm most proud of that I've accomplished.
That's very interesting, especially because from what I'm hearing, you had a model of your parents mm-hmm. living one specific way. And that was kind of the model that you expected yourself to pick up and live and kind of do the same thing. Obviously sometimes with kids, there's a model, you know, there's an example, and they can either follow the example or kind of go the exact opposite way.
Yeah.
So why do you think you fell in line with that paradigm, that way of thinking, that you eventually had to kind of turn yourself around from?
I think, you know, this is something that I talk about a lot in my own coaching work, which is that it's kind of all we know. It's the paradigm, the belief system that we were indoctrinated into without realizing that we were being indoctrinated into anything. I think when we look at our parents, as young as when we're children, looking to our mom to see, like, is this safe? Can I touch that? Can I explore that? It's like we're looking to our parents' reactions to know, is this safe? Am I okay? Am I going to be okay? And that happens so young. And in some ways, even as adults, I still know some adults that are looking for their parents' approval and validation over their current life choices and career and romantic partners and their parenting style. They're still taking a lot of parenting from their parents on. And so it's interesting, the process of individuating, you know, from our family and finding our own way, I think is really true freedom, is really creating and defining it on your own terms. But it really requires the awareness to notice what are all the patterns and belief systems that are subconscious to me, because I take them as fact. I take them as just the only truth that exists or the only thing I know to exist. And how can I say to myself, you know, even though I've never seen anyone do it differently and I don't know how to do it differently, I have a feeling something else is possible here.
So you said it kind of takes maybe a skill in knowing how to spot those subconscious patterns that may or may not be beneficial to us. How did you develop that particular skill, and how might you recommend someone else do the same thing?
Yes. So I think that there are definitely things we can do on our own. The most probably known way is like hiring a coach who can give you that perspective, because sometimes it's hard to see our own blind spots. You might notice that when a friend asks you for advice, it's like so easy for you to give advice. And then you're like, huh, how come my brain doesn't seem to work for me the same way? You know, so sometimes it's easier to solve other people's problems than our own for that reason. Just another reason I think we're meant to be in community and connection with other people. So yeah, I think hiring a coach is one way. I think there's also a useful tool called Enneagrams, which maybe you're familiar with. It's sort of like a Myers-Briggs personality test. And you can take, you know, an assessment for that. You can also just look up the 9 types and self-identify. But that's one of the quickest ways to see, oh, okay, here's my personality test. Here are the things that are my basic desires, my basic fears. Here is how I tend to navigate life. And the Enneagrams are very interesting because they're both based in psychology, but also I feel like they're very rooted in trauma response as well. So they look at what's your coping mechanism from childhood that you have to learn really early on. And so even though you might have siblings that grew up in the same family system in the same environment, you'll have different Enneagram types, which is really interesting because everyone has a different response to that environment. Like, how do you cope with what you went through? Everyone carries pain differently. Everyone responds to pain differently. So that's a great way to get that self-awareness, is to take one of these types of personality tests. And then I also believe that wherever we feel stuck in friction and resistance in our life, I know we tend to like not like struggle and not like friction and not like obstacles, but it's a reason why, because this is pointing you in a direction of something to look at. You know, like when we have certain struggles and pains and loss and just like feeling stuck, that's kind of a common one of like, I don't know why, but I just feel so stuck professionally, so stuck with my health, no matter what vision I have or how much I go to the gym, I keep falling off the wagon. Like there's certain places in our life, maybe it's romantic partnership, we keep attracting the same kind of relationship. So those areas that we don't like have a lot of wisdom and information for something we get to look at and uncover and understand for why is this pattern happening in our life. And that is one of the easiest threads to kind of follow, and then go back and be like, okay, well, how does this relate to my parents' relationship or the example of a relationship in my life? Or how does this relate to what I believe is possible around making money and my passions and career? You know, so there's really great questions we can ask ourselves when we find ourselves in these stuck places. But the quality of questions we ask need to be upgraded. It can't just be like, why is this happening to me? Which is kind of a common question that we ask is like, why? Why am I like this? Or why won't this stop? Or, you know, whatever. And we also like to know like how, you know, but I actually think better questions to ask are like, okay, who do I need to be? What kind of version of me do I need to show up as to get through this? What can I learn about what I'm going through? What muscle do I feel like is being built? What's the growth opportunity here? So what am I learning? How am I growing? Who am I becoming? What's something I'm learning that's having a really big impact on my life and my trajectory right now? So I do feel like our lives can be upgraded by the questions we ask ourselves when we find ourselves stuck.
I really like that question of what muscle is being built right now. I think that's a really quick way to start training your brain to kind of look at situations differently, specifically during struggles. I can think of a few in my personal life that That question might be very useful, particularly. And actually, I wanted to ask, do you have any examples of times in your life when you maybe felt stuck and then you started looking at the stuck area and that started to help you figure out maybe some method to move forward?
It's a great question. So one area that I alluded to at the beginning is around money mindset. And so when I started my career in finance, for instance, that felt like an obvious place to make money because everyone thinks you make money in finance. So there was like a status quo belief system around that being a great job because there's, you know, abundance to be made there. But I realized quickly that I didn't feel fulfilled. It wasn't meaningful and rewarding to me beyond the financials. I loved working with entrepreneurs, but I wanted something that was more impactful, that I felt was more aligned with my sense of mission. And that wasn't it for me. And so when I moved into executive coaching, I had a lot of money mindset beliefs around how much money you're capped at making, how hard it is to build an hourly business, how hard it is to find clients, how hard it is to sell someone on working with you, and also belief systems around how hard it is to be an entrepreneur and the level of hard work and sweat, blood, tears that you need to shed in order to get anything off the ground. Because my parents were entrepreneurs from Taiwan. So I think I was very close to the immigrant story of their struggles. And so I also just assumed that I'm going to have to sacrifice a lot and it's going to be painful. And I'm going to have to give up a lot of my joys in order to make this work. That as a result, I caught myself in this holding pattern where it was like, I almost didn't want to put my foot on the gas because I was afraid of all the sacrifice that I was going to have to make to pursue my own company and to build this executive coaching work. So I felt like I was, in your point, stuck. Like I wanted something, but I was like holding off on going after it because I didn't realize all the things I thought I was going to lose in order to make it happen. And so then I ended up reading a bunch of money mindset books because I do believe that it's really hard to do anything around money, including being a salesperson, an entrepreneur, financing, whatever you're doing. If you have limiting beliefs around money, it's going to really impact your vision and your efficacy of raising money and all those things. So I read some books, I hired a money mindset coach, and what I started to see was I started to untangle all the random word associations I had around money, like money corrupts, money superficial, rich people are bad, or rich people make money doing bad things. Like I started to understand like, oh, there's no wonder I'm not more attracted to making money because I actually have all this negative association with money and the sacrifice and hard work and effort required to make it. And so once I got really clear on like, okay, these are the beliefs I got from my mom, my dad, here's how I relate to money culturally, because we live in a culture that says sacrifice, hard work, push, push, push. And then I had to really detox those belief systems out of my body and realizing that even though it's true that you can, you know, work hard, play hard. And it's true that, you know, there's certain belief systems that are true, but you kind of make them self-fulfilling and that's the only thing you think exists. And so I started to realize that even though the most of the world operates this way, it wasn't the only thing that was possible. And I started to see examples of people who loved what they did, were making an impact and making a lot of money, were fulfilled, were healthy, were creating beautiful families and romantic partnerships and doing what they love. Sometimes we have to go after something before there's even evidence for it. And I think that was a huge part of what was hard about it was so much of what I've created in my life, I didn't necessarily have role models for. I didn't necessarily see evidence for it being possible. And so that's where the faith and trust and the willingness to, you know, have the courage to take a leap and be like, maybe it won't work, but maybe what if it does work is sort of the leap of faith there. Yeah. And so then I decided that I wanted to clean up my consciousness around wealth and to make sure that I was creating it in a way that felt really good and that felt empowering and that felt sustainable. And so I decided, you know, there are certain things that I will not do because I think it's the only way to make money, which meaning like, I know a lot of people say you have to have a sales funnel, you have to run Facebook ads, you have to have an email list. Like there's certain things that you might believe is the only way to make money, but I will tell you that like, I don't have any of those things. I don't have a funnel. I don't have run Facebook ads. I don't have an email list. Like, and I know that maybe you're probably a little bummed about that, but that's the truth. And I've been able to build a very successful business, making more money than I do now than I did in finance, which again is like mind blowing because if you had told me that when I left finance, I would have been like, oh, that's cute. Like, no way, no way that's possible. I would have been like, what planet do you live on? That I can't even imagine. Maybe like in 10 years, maybe at the end of my career, but like really in the first couple of years of my career. So I wouldn't have been able to create the current life of possibility that I had now if I held on to what I thought was possible. So yeah, I think that answers your question. So things like believing that money can actually come to you when you're enjoying what you do. And actually the more fun you have, the more money you're a match for. And the more you love what you do, the more competent and skilled you can become an expert at what you do and a master at what you do. You know, things that like didn't really exist. Now I say things to myself like money comes to me in all ways, always, you know, like affirmations like that, that kind of sound crazy. And again, like I wouldn't tell someone who's in scarcity mindset to start believing that because it's too much of a 180, but I can tell you that my beliefs around money are so night and day from when I started.
Yeah. I think maybe the biggest lesson from that story is that business is a mirror of whoever owns the business. And I've seen this time and time again with the people that I talk to. You know, no business can excel past whatever personal successes you've had in your own life. And the problems that you personally have will be translated to your creations. So your business or, you know, your children, I personally believe. So cleaning up, you know, weeding the mind of maybe these less than desirable plants, you know, in the form of thoughts or mindsets, can make room for more profitable plants that can reap, from which we can hopefully reap better fruit. And so I really like this idea of cleaning up your consciousness, because, you know, it is a garden. Our mind is a garden, and the things that we let grow there affect the soil as well as the gardener. And if we prune and if we take care of the soil and the garden and we weed it, we can have quite beautiful plants and the fruit we can share with other people. So I'm curious, you said you hired coaches, but with cleaning up your consciousness, did you have to like literally practice and say, oh wait, there's an idea that isn't necessarily true, or kind of walk us through that process?
Absolutely. So usually we notice the limiting thoughts the moment we take action. So it's like, for instance, if I'm about to get onto this podcast, that's the action I'm about to take. That's when the thoughts are going to come up of like, oh no, like, do I feel ready? Is he going to like me? What kind of questions is he going to ask? How do I know I'm going to say the right thing? You know, if this is one of my first podcasts, I might be like, oh my gosh, this is going to exist forever. I don't know how I feel about that. You know, online, like there could be all sorts of fears and talk coming up. And so that's really when I think our pending doom generator is the loudest, is right when we're about to take action. When we're just sitting there, you know, enjoying not doing anything, we're not going to have these thoughts. But the moment we take action is sort of when these thoughts and feelings come up. And so that's the first place I would just catch it. It's like the moment you're about to take action, you notice like, oh, I'm scared. I'm feeling guilty. Like I should have done more. I'm feeling kind of resentful. I'm feeling frustrated. I'm feeling confused and whatever it is. And then I would ask myself, okay, is this fear rational? Like, is this something that could be true? And if it is a rational fear, is there something I can do about it? And the truth is, you know, our mind is very intelligent. So sometimes it's great at preparing us for things. But the problem with the mind is that sometimes it has a lot of irrational fears, or sometimes it blows things out of proportion. So it's like, for some reason, the fear I feel in my body is that of like being exposed and like, I don't know, like maybe even dying is like what it feels like in my body. But really what it's about is, what if they don't like me, you know? And then I had to like remind myself of like, okay, I know that you're afraid that someone might not like you, which is really uncomfortable because it probably reminds you of when you were bullied and, you know, that didn't feel good, but you're safe. And I think that that's something that our body tends to confuse as discomfort for safety. So one of the first things that I would just ask myself is, am I actually safe? And it's like, yeah, I'm a little bit nervous to come onto this podcast, but am I physically safe? Yeah, of course I'm safe. So that's like one of the first things to get myself into a better headspace is to untangle discomfort and safety. And then the next thing I would ask myself is, okay, well, what's the worst thing that could happen? And I'm like, okay, let me think about this. The worst thing that could happen is, I don't know, you hate me, your listeners hate me, they all decide to hate, I don't know, this is like my bully version of middle school. They all decide to go on Amazon and write me the worst reviews. And they're just like, I hate Victoria. I'm like, okay, wow. That would be the worst thing that could happen. One, probably not really rational, but okay, let's just say that that's the worst case thing. I would ask myself, okay, if that happened, do I still want to go on this podcast? Like, would I still be okay? And I would think about it. And maybe earlier in my career, I would be like, no, I'm not going to risk that. But now in my career, I'm kind of like, yeah, I think I would risk that. Like, I think that even if those things happen, I would still want to keep putting myself out there for, you know, I would put more weight on the few people who would value what I have to say over the people who maybe don't like what I have to say. And as long as there's a few people who liked it, then it was worth it, is maybe more how I would think about it today. And so that's another thing to empower yourself, is to remind yourself that your human can handle a lot of things, but you don't have to put yourself in the situation if you don't want to. So like, is this fear rational? Okay, it is. But if the worst thing happened, do I still want this? I do. Okay, so I feel empowered. This is a personal choice. I am choosing this for myself. And just by framing it as a personal choice versus like, oh no, what if something happens to me? It gives me so much more trust and courage and peace around it, and makes me feel like I'm in control as well. Like there's a sense of power of like, I'm choosing this. No one's making me do anything. I don't have to do this. And so I'm choosing this. And so just that alone creates a lot of peace in my system. So those are kind of the ways that I would catch the thoughts that come up for you.
That's really interesting. You kind of talked about a Stoic philosophy that kind of inspired the serenity prayer that's in, you know, AA meetings and mm-hmm. Alcoholics Anonymous, the idea of controlling what you can control, not controlling or not worrying about what you can't control, you know, and kind of working to spot the difference. And I'm interested in the fact that you use that as a method of self-regulation, which I think is a skill that might not be taught enough, kind of the mm-hmm. ability to calm yourself down, give yourself comfort in critical mm-hmm. moments and kind of reassess. Because like you said, you know, there are a lot of irrational fears that we have. And it's probably because, you know, 300, 400 years ago, we were all, or at least our ancestors, were fighting for literal survival, you know?
And yeah, nowadays, running for our lives.
Exactly. Nowadays, we don't have those exact problems. We have, you know, a set of different ones that may be created by ourselves, but who knows? So our fear isn't as useful nowadays, but it's still functioning on full blast like it used to be. And so being able to kind of self-regulate, like you mentioned, and calm yourself down and say, hey, I'm not going to die. Like, it's okay. I can just hop off the podcast. If Justin starts being a really big jerk, I can just click end and that's it, you know, like it's over. And it's really, I think that's really key, because when you're trying to replace some thought patterns and paradigms, oftentimes, at least what I found, you either replace it with a better one, or you, which I think is probably the best way to do it, or you just kind of start taking it out and saying, hey, this one doesn't work for me, which can maybe leave a vacuum, which might leave a little bit more fear in your life. So I think that skill of being able to calm yourself down is crucial.
And I love that you've said that, because that would be like step two, is after you're in a calm state. I love that you said self-regulation. You would ask yourself, well, what's a better feeling thought? You know, it's like, okay, so a better feeling thought is, Justin was like a really nice guy. Like I, you know, corresponded with him over some emails, and I really love the concept. I got to check out some of your podcasts. I love that you're doing this, because it's so important to look at like the arc of life and not just successes. Mm-hmm. And I'd be like, you know what? I'm just really grateful that I get to be in good company on topics that are really interesting. And now that I feel grateful, I'm actually quite excited to be on this podcast. And yeah, you know, like excitement accompanies a little bit of fear, but overall I'm more excited than I am scared. And, you know, and I'm going to reach, you know, different people, your friends, your community. And that's so cool to get to branch out and meet new people through your podcast. So those are some thoughts that I would have access to if I wasn't in a panic mode. So when we're in fear, it's really hard to get ourselves to a state of trust. First, we have to get ourselves regulated and create peace and calm in our system. And from there, we have access to better feeling thoughts.
Yeah. And being perfectly honest for all of our listeners out there, that is something I am working on right now, that self-regulation and kind of being able to manage yourself. And You mentioned something earlier that I think I'd like to touch on now. When you first started, you talked about undoing the programming, the paradigms, but then you also mentioned transgenerational trauma. And then you mentioned kind of in the Enneagram, how it also talks about your trauma responses. And you kind of mentioned being bullied a little bit. Do you mind if we talk about that a little bit and kind of what that transgenerational trauma looked like, at least for you and your family, and how you specifically with the trauma, kind of how you got over or coped, maybe is a better word.
Yeah, it's a great question and something that I don't often talk about on podcasts, and I'm happy to discuss with you here. So I grew up, and sorry, there's some noise in the background. I grew up in a Chinese culture, and it's very common, a couple things in Chinese culture. One is that the boys are favorited. There's definitely more value placed on the men and boys and sons than on daughters. And then so it's very patriarchal in that sense. And then the other thing that I would say is quite common in the Chinese culture. I mean, there's good things too, but we're talking about trauma today. The challenges are that physical abuse is very common. So forms of physical punishment are quite common as an Asian lineage in general. In many cases, my parents grew up watching their dads beat up their moms, and teachers would punish physically the students when they did something bad or wrong, got something wrong in an exam. So what that ends up looking like is that, you know, we go into this in the book, but for many reasons, we don't learn how to healthily process our emotions. And to me, trauma is not just dictated by the severity or intensity of the event. Trauma is really defined by your ability in the moment to emotionally process what happened to you. So that's why, like, some people say, like, well, nothing really intense happened to me relative to what I've heard some people go through. But it's not so much how intense the event was as it is whether or not we felt safe to feel what we felt, we had someone to talk to and cry out our tears, or to just have a safe place to process the impact on us of what we experienced. And for many cultures, not just Chinese culture, we don't really feel our emotions. We don't learn how to healthily process. We don't have that role modeled by our parents. Like, our parents aren't regulated. They might be screaming at each other. They might be, you know, acting out from their childhood wounds. And that's kind of how parenting happens across the board. But in my family, I would say that there's a long history of the woman particularly not feeling wanted in their family system. So feeling like they don't belong, feeling unwanted, feeling like they don't matter, their voice doesn't matter. Just feeling like maybe my family would prefer that I'm not here. Like, I don't really belong here. So that's from the female side. And then I would say in general, because there's been so much physical punishment, hitting of kids, very militant as well in my family. And so that kind of aggression and anger has also been not healthily processed. So there's been sort of toxic expressions of both masculinity, but also just aggression and anger. And then that physical trauma of being hit, as you can imagine, makes you feel like unworthy, unvaluable. And it's common for kids to internalize the attitude that their parents had toward them themselves. So then they start to feel like they're really critical of themselves. They're always judging themselves. And for a lot of us, the voice of our inner critic can sound like a parent. You know, it's like kind of parental and it's authoritative tone and kind of shaming us, you know, depending on, again, what our experience was with our caregivers. So that is, in a nutshell, the kind of transgenerational trauma, like, just, you know, a flavor of what was passed down for many generations. And for me, it took me a while to, one, forgive my mom for, I feel like, not using her voice and being able to stand up for herself. And so a lot of my pain was from not feeling stood up for, but also as an adult realizing that my mom didn't have the self-personal power to stand up for herself and protect me and defend her kids, you know? So there was a sense of, at the time, feeling just the impact of that, but then as an adult feeling resentful and angry and, you know, like, how come you weren't more there, to then now also understanding of, okay, this is why it's transgenerational trauma, because she was not able to heal it for herself. And that's why she passed it on. And the work that I do today for me and my clients is also like, how can we not just remove trauma, but remove all limiting belief systems and things that would be quite constraints to our children or to our cultures or to our friendships and communities or our leadership, right? The employees that we get to work with and teams we get to work with. So, I don't know if that answers your question, but yes, it is. It's intense, you know, the things that can go on in families and never be spoken of. Or I think a lot of us, especially overachievers, think that strength and resilience is our ability to compartmentalize and sort of numb ourselves to certain things that have happened to us and kind of focus elsewhere and be like, you know what, the past is the past. You can't change it. So let's just move on. But what I've learned through my own training is that we can't heal what we don't feel. And until we process it, it's frozen in the body. And when it's frozen in the body, it's kind of like having all your internet browsers open. It's like, it just slows down the whole system. And so we're really not able to operate at full capacity until we kind of remove all those stacks of unprocessed energy patterns that we might still be holding on to from our life. And then unfortunately from generations as well.
Yeah. Like I said, I didn't say this, but the problems that we don't solve, you know, get passed on to our creations, whether that's our children, our business, even the teams that we lead, like you said. And I think, you know, it bears repeating, trauma isn't just of an event that was horrific, heinous, whatever that happened to someone. It was the person who was not in a state to healthily process the emotions from that situation. And I think that's really key, because none of us want to cause trauma to, you know, the people around us. None of us want to be that one person who just explodes at the person at the gas station or whatever. So I think that's really good. And it also gives us a little bit of grace in understanding I could get trauma from breaking my leg, whereas someone else needs to, be a prisoner for years. And that's how they get trauma. And actually, I wanted to ask, in being an executive coach, dealing with these people who are in positions of authority and are leading men and women, have you found that you often do need to touch on issues like personal trauma or their ability to cope with certain things to help them be a better leader?
Absolutely, because I believe that we are often trying to avoid people in situations that make us feel something that we don't want to feel. And we usually learn that we don't want to feel certain things because we've been made to feel those things before and we don't want it to happen again. And so it's very common for my clients to have been bullied before, to have their version of volatility in their childhood, whether it was political instability in the country they grew up in, or it was actually in their family system. But everyone has had like kind of a high tolerance set point to stress and anxiety. It was like, for whatever reason, maybe they had a difficult sibling, but just they were constantly surrounded by some volatility, by maybe some anger in the household, by insecurity, maybe financial instability. And that unsafety is carried in their body. And until we, again, like you said, self-regulate and calibrate your nervous system to a new reality of a safe environment where there's abundance and joy and health and relaxation, our bodies will still be very wired and used to an environment where we had to be vigilant and kind of looking over our shoulder. So it's very common for almost like the more successful you are, at least the clients that I work with, the more they've been in super intense anxiety inducing stressful environments growing up, which is why like they almost have a higher tolerance for it. That's why they can ride out the highs and lows of entrepreneurship. That's why they have what it takes to do really hard things in the world, because in some ways they're like, compared to what I've been through, this is nothing. But in other ways, you know, they don't want to feel that level of helplessness again. They don't want to feel that level of ridicule again. They don't want to feel that level of embarrassment again, or shame again, or not enoughness again. So to your point, like they might be starting businesses from a place of wanting to prove something, they want to matter, have significance in the world. They might be leading from a place of wanting to be liked by others. And therefore, if they have to say something hard and truthful, they're afraid that they're not going to be liked anymore. They're going to fall out of favor. Maybe they need to be put on a pedestal, but you know, the only way off a pedestal is a really hard fall. So there can be different reasons for why they're even choosing to be a leader that might be rooted from still like a wound of like wanting something versus really like having a sense of self-leadership and self-responsibility to heal and make sure that you're coming from a clean place so that none of that is tangled with like your past, with wounds, with things you're trying to avoid from happening. So I ultimately believe that our ability to emotionally process the hard things in our life and to emotionally process things that come up day to day as we experience them allows us the emotional freedom to be with anything that arises. Because if I now know how to be with anger, pain, sadness, loss, then all of a sudden I feel a sense of power where I'm like, you know what? I don't need to avoid anything. Like there's no person or situation or circumstance that I'm avoiding because I feel like no matter what, I'll be okay. And that's a step up from, even just courage. Like I think courage is amazing to access, but I believe that we are most powerful when we have that sense of trust as well.
How do you bridge the gap or help your clients bridge the gap? Because I'm assuming as a coach, the clients, they have to do the work or otherwise it doesn't work. How do you help them bridge the gap between, leader A who is doing it for, personal emotional reasons to leader B who does feel like come rain or shine, they'll be okay?
Yeah. So I do believe, as I mentioned, we want to look at what we might still be avoiding from happening to us. So sometimes that can be processing through something traumatic that happened in the past. Sometimes that could be, looking at wanting approval, wanting validation, wanting to be well-liked by others. And like, what does it mean if someone thinks you're X or Y? And so sometimes it is really looking at like, what is the meaning you're making of these situations that is making it so risky and scary to do what you feel like you need to do as a leader? So that could be why they might avoid hard conversations, why they might avoid giving feedback, why they might avoid taking bold risks. Why they might avoid even like getting started altogether because of that fear of failure. And so the first step would be to really like untangle really like what is the discomfort that feels so unsafe for you? Like what's the big risk? What are you afraid is going to happen if this doesn't work out the way you want it to work out? And then I believe that once you're able to look at and process whatever might be getting in the way, you also build your capacity to walk with the discomfort that I believe arises from uncertainty. So most people, when they don't feel safe, have a level of control and prediction that makes them feel safe. It's like they want to control and predict everything. And if they don't know something, it makes them really anxious. If they feel like something didn't go the way as planned, it's really upsetting to them. And so to me, that's a really great indicator when someone needs to control and predict life, that they're living actually in a lot of fear and a lot of trying to stay in their comfort zone, trying to manage a sense of safety. And so that would be one of the first things is to create more safety in their nervous system, to help self-regulate, to help them realize that, okay, like I don't need to have this tightness over my reality, because I believe that when we need to control and predict life, we end up fitting our reality into a much smaller box than what is possible for us. It's like the need to control and predict limits the possibilities available to us. And it's like, I give this analogy in bending reality, which is that it's like when we're born, we have access to a castle with infinite rooms, which is just diversity of life. But then because we're afraid of certain things happening, we don't want to feel certain ways, we end up narrowing all the rooms to like one room that we have complete mastery over. And we feel safe in that one room that we have complete control over. And like, that's kind of what it looks like to unfortunately choose to narrow all that's available in life to this like one room out of a fear of safety. And so that's the first thing I teach in the book is like how to surface where you feel contracted in your life. How do you actually process and release it? So a lot of the book is around self-regulation and feeling your emotions. And then after that, I believe you can start to access this deeper self-trust, but also this trust of what you were saying, like you're going to be okay no matter what. And I believe people have different access points to trust. Like I've seen some people who really have a deep faith in God and believe that like God is looking out for them and the universe is looking out for them and they're safe. And they just have a trust that there's a bigger plan, like God has a bigger plan, and that's how they trust. I also know other people who have been able to access trust because they have just created enough evidence in their life where they're like, okay, I know how to figure this out. I trust my intelligence. I trust my problem solving abilities. I've been able to get myself out of every mess I've ever been in. So there's like a trust of my past. There's also, I believe, a very strong version of trust, which is truly believing that something will either come easily to you and you'll be grateful that it came so easily, or you'll be stronger and wiser for the lesson and the challenge there. And I believe, you know, a lot of us can relate to this. I certainly can relate to this, which is I believe in some ways that everything I've experienced in my life, from like the family system that I chose, in some ways my soul knew that if it like chose these parents, these people, these first professions, careers that I've had, I would have grown and honed and developed myself in exactly the direction that I would need to become the version of me today. So it's like the version of me today is completely a response to how I navigated the hardships of my life. And so we want to look at how did the hardships and the low points create my character, my empathy, my compassion, my care, my interest, the things that I decided to pursue as a career, like the women I'm sculpting. Like I get to really have a sense of pride over like, I'm becoming a version of me that is by choice, how I'm choosing to navigate and respond to my life's obstacles. You know, Mary Morrissey has a great quote of, the content of our life is the curriculum for our evolution. And I believe that there's this really big context that we can hold if we trust that everything that comes our way is meant to like develop our muscle, to grow us in exactly the direction that's required for who we're meant to be on the planet.
Wow. That's definitely a beautiful way of looking at life. And I think even for people who might be struggling particularly, that might be a beautiful exercise to engage in and look at your past and say, what struggles have I had that I may or may not regret, but what
that shaped who I am.
Yeah. And how have they shaped who I am? You know, how have they sanded the edges of my soul and buffed up parts of me that, you know, are better now.
Stronger, resilient.
Exactly. You've used the term safety, like they feel safe in the nervous system or they don't feel safe in the nervous system. How exactly, because that sounds like a little bit more of a physical method, you know, of helping people. What measures have you seen actually work in that area?
Yeah, it's a great question. I believe it's why things like yoga and self-care and massages and all of that's trending right now, because we're starting to realize like, oh, it's somatic. It's in my physical body. I need to experience relaxation at the physical level. Like my mind is going to stay like a monkey brain until I physically feel relaxed in the body. So I do think that there's all sorts of things like meditation and breath work and, you know, different types of therapy, Reiki, like there's all sorts of things under the sun that people are experimenting with today. I believe breath work is tremendously potent. There's actually a free guide on my website for a breath work that you can take. It's kind of like Wim Hof in a way. It's called 3-part circular breath work. And that is one of the quickest ways to clear out what's the debris in your nervous system, like what's your body holding on to. And it uses, so I believe you move energy through breath, movement, and sound. And so breath work, you can both make sounds on your exhale and also just through your breath, you can release things. So that's one of the best tools I find. I've met people who are completely new to self-development, but they are so committed to breath work. And I believe that the results they've achieved in their life reflect someone who's been like 10 years in the rabbit hole of self-development. That's how powerful I've seen breath work to be. So it's kind of a shortcut. If anyone's like, if I don't ever want to read a book, if I don't want to hire a coach, what can I do? Do breath work. And then otherwise, I do believe that, again, like our emotions are held somatically. There's a great book called The Body Keeps the Score. And it really speaks to why the physical body holds on to things and like freezes it almost like a time capsule, these events that happen in our lives, and they're held in different parts of our body. And for a lot of people, because you can't experience the full range of emotions without also experiencing uncomfortable ones, negative, unpleasant ones, what I found is that people who want to access more pleasure, they're like, I want to have more like joy in my life. I want to have like things take my breath away, but they don't want to feel any of the discomfort. They don't want to feel any pain. They don't want to feel any loss, grief, losing a loved one. And that is actually what blocks them from feeling that full aliveness. And so, you know, I've hired a sex coach. And one of the things that I've been really fascinated by is that the sex coach said, you know, I came to sex coaching because because what I really wanted to teach people was pleasure. I wanted to give people the experience of bringing more pleasure into life. But what they found was that as soon as they opened themselves up to feel pleasure, what was blocking them was like a stack of pain that they hadn't been willing to process yet. And until they were willing to face and process a stack of, you know, old memories, traumas, wounds, sadness, until they could process that, they were blocking themselves from also feeling any pleasure and positive feelings. And so that's why even in sex coaching, there's a lot of emotional processing that happens as well. And so I believe that our physical body feels quite numb when we're not willing to feel the sensations in our body, when we're not willing to feel what might be painful to remember in our body, we will be tempted to live in our head more. And for a lot of us overachievers, the only times we think about our body are when we go to the gym, or like, we're kind of like, I should be healthy as part of like a holistic routine. I should eat well and work out, but we don't actually notice and feel much of the sensations in our body. We don't allow ourselves to feel emotions. We usually try to minimize them or numb them, or even, you know, drink or take things to kind of avoid feeling them. We might even eat to avoid feeling things. We all have different coping mechanisms for how we personally avoid feeling our emotions. And I believe that that is a huge piece of the puzzle, is like, if we can feel our emotions, we let in this like full range of life, of aliveness, of like the 88 keys on a piano. Like, we get to feel and experience everything as we're intended. Like, I think humans have 5 senses, except a lot of us are very numb to our 5 senses. So yes, I think that's like how to bring more color into your life. Let yourself feel more.
Wow. The terrible thing about really great podcasts that I, you know, I have is often the guest will say things that make me think, and then I completely forget what exactly I'm going. But luckily, you know, we're kind of at the end of the show, so I don't have to hide that fact from people. But Victoria, it's been such a pleasure having you on the show. Also, I am very impressed that you know that there are 88 keys on a piano. I did not know that. Remember that cool fact. But before we let you go, how can people reach out to you, support you, and see what you're up to?
Yeah, you can find me on my website, www.victoriasong.me. And I have a recent Wall Street Journal bestseller. My book, Bending Reality, How to Make the Impossible Probable, is a great way to access my work. I really tried to teach everything that I've learned from working with 25 coaches, investing hundreds of thousands of dollars in it, like a decade of my life, and all my certifications, everything I do with my clients, I try to give it all in the book. So I really hope that is supportive. And if anyone feels inspired to, I'd love for them to leave a review on Amazon. That's very helpful to authors.
Yes. And I would encourage you to leave a good review. Don't leave one of those mean reviews that we were talking about earlier. Victoria, now we need to give our audience some action items. And this is the list that I came up with based on some of the things we talked about. Number one, examine the stuck areas of your life. Number two, look for examples that prove what you want is possible. So kind of counterexamples to the negative paradigms in your mind. And then number three is examine kind of the benefits of some of your past struggles that you've gained, some of the ways that it shaped your life and maybe made you a better, more whole person. Would you like to add to that list at all?
Yes, I think, you know, there are some definitely powerful tools, like there's positive focus. The name Dan Sullivan was slipping me for a moment, but it's a really great tool. You look at the past week and you ask yourself, what are my top 10 wins? You can do personal or professional. And then you ask yourself, okay, what made this win possible? And then what's one next action I can take to double down on what's working? And this is really powerful, because so often we focus on our weaknesses, and this really allows you to hone in on like what is working, so you can double down on your strengths.
Well, awesome. So I will go ahead and put those action items in the show notes, as well as how to reach out to you. But thank you so much, Victoria, for being here and sharing your story, and just generally making at least me think, and I guarantee you, as well as the audience, they'll be thinking too. So thank you.
Thank you. So great to be here. Thanks, Justin.
Thank you guys for listening to the Hard Thing podcast today. Thank you for being such troopers and paying attention to little old me and my awesome, awesome guests like Victoria. Thank you guys for coming back every Monday. If you guys have any suggestions about the show, go to Instagram and reach out to @thehardthingpodcast. Send me a message about what you think should happen or what you don't like happening or all that. Also, I'd like to invite you guys to go to Operation Underground Railroad's website, orrescue.org. They are a nonprofit organization that goes undercover to rescue kids from sex trafficking, which, as we all know, is a world plague. And there are a few people out there who are actually doing physical things to stop it. If you go to orrescue.org, you can get involved, learn about the problem, and start doing something about it. I'd also like to invite you guys to go to thehardthingpodcast.com. There you'll find whatever else is going on with the podcast, as well as some of our merchandise, including shirts, t-shirts, hoodies. I guess I said shirt twice, but hats, all the things. Again, go to thehardthingpodcast.com. Come back next week, guys, for another excellent episode. Again, thank you guys for coming back every week, and keep doing hard things, because you will overcome average. Hey guys, one quick announcement for today's show, and you might have heard this already, even in today's episode, but I have an awesome opportunity for you guys. Once in a lifetime, you have the opportunity to have dinner with myself and a covert CIA operative. That's right, an undercover spy. My guest, Andrew Bustamante, has been gracious enough to offer himself up as guest for a dinner with myself and one lucky audience member. So if you want to sign up for that, make sure you hit the link in the show notes below. As well, you can go to Instagram and hit the link in my bio at The Hard Thing Podcast. This is first come, first serve, and there's only one slot. So whoever signs up first will have the opportunity to come to Utah and have dinner with myself and Andrew Bustamante. It's an exciting opportunity. It's one that you'll be able to brag about to your friends of being able to sit down having dinner with an undercover secret agent. So don't waste any time. Go ahead and sign up in the link in the show notes or go to Instagram at The Hard Thing Podcast and click the link in my bio and you'll find all the relevant information there. So look forward to having dinner with you.